Welcome to Cultimatum, the podcast that delves deep into the culture of complexities of cults and human trafficking. I'm your host, Anonymous Andrew. Each week, we explore different facets of cult life and human trafficking, from the psychological manipulation to the brave stories of those who have escaped.
Hello, everyone. I'm Melody. I'm Andrew's co-host. Having experienced the depth of a cult firsthand, specifically the House of Yahweh, I'm here as an advocate for fellow survivors. My journey has inspired me to help others who find themselves in similar situations. This podcast is committed to respecting our guests' privacy to ensure their comfort and safety. We offer them the option to remain anonymous.
Additionally, we would like to include a disclaimer. The views and opinions expressed by our hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the official policy or position of Cultimatum or its affiliates. Cultimatum is not responsible and does not verify for accuracy any of the information shared by our hosts and guests. The content discussed on this podcast is based on personal experiences, opinions, and speculation, and should not be construed as professional services or advice. Neither the host nor the guest are assuming liability for any misuse or reliance on the information presented. This podcast is for informational purposes only, and listeners are encouraged to conduct their own research and seek professional advice where appropriate.
Before we dive into today's episode, we want to issue a trigger warning. Some episodes may explore explicit and potentially disturbing topics such as sexual abuse, rape, human trafficking, suicide, and other sensitive subjects. Listener discretion is advised.
Welcome to the Cultimatum Podcast, the culture of cults. And my name is Anonymous Andrew, and with me tonight is my co-host, Melody. Hi, Melody.
Hi, Andrew. We've got another Seventh-day Adventist guest with us today. Her name is Melissa Doogie Spears. I believe I said that correct. She is an author, and she's got quite Spire. Okay, I did say it wrong. Sorry about that. Spire. She is an author, and she actually has quite a presence on TikTok as well, and she is here to share her story with us. Welcome to the show, Melissa.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, welcome. Where would you like to start?
Well, I will just start at the very beginning of you know, why I'm here and what my story is, and you guys, please jump in and interrupt with questions. I love questions. Nothing's off topic, I don't think. So I am a fourth generation on both sides of my family, Seventh-day Adventist. And of course, like all good cults, they say that they're not a cult. You know, they think they're very mainstream Christian, the only Christians, of course. You've never heard that before, right?
No.
And they are very fundamentalist. Obviously, the Seventh-day thing comes from the fact that they worship on Saturdays. They follow kind of the biblical laws of that, sundown Friday to sundown Saturday. And they are extremely, the culty parts of them are, first of all, they had a leader. She's dead now, but she was a cult leader to beat all cult leaders when she was alive. Ellen White, we call her Egg White, those of us who are ex, because she went by E.G. White. So the church was started from the Millerite movement. So in the mid-1840s, it was one of those that branched off. And so it shares some stuff with the JWs and the Mormons, although they all hate each other and they say they don't, but they do. And so very end times, culty, you know, big into Revelation, all that kind of stuff. And so Ellen White started the church. She got hit in the head with a rock when she was nine by basically the Victorian equivalent of a mean girl, I guess, and caused her some severe injury that left her in bed for weeks and really, really injured. And she started having seizures, and all of a sudden she was inspired by God. So she also worked in her family's hattery business, which of course has mercury poisoning. So there may possibly have been some Mad Hatter's stuff going on there too. But the Adventists don't admit any of this. And when you really do face them with, like, she had a traumatic brain injury, then of course their reaction to that is, well, God used it. You know, spoke through her injury anyway. And just recently, I have learned about something called Geschwind's syndrome that is particularly something that they only identified it in like 1980-something, that is something that is developed by people with the particular kind of brain injury that she had. And it basically ticks all the symptoms that she had. It's hypergraphia. She wrote copiously, just copiously. It's hyper religiosity, which obviously she had. It's, you know, thinking you're inspired of God. It has hyposexuality. She was very, very rigidly against sexual everything. Her first book that she wrote was to prevent masturbation in children, because, you know, that's a really serious religious issue. So ridiculous.
Okay.
So one of the other founders of the church was John Harvey Kellogg, the cereal guy. And he had his own weird, weird cult-like stuff. And it was, again, all related around sexuality and everything. So one of the things that I'm always pointing out, that Adventists really hate that I point out, is that the church was really founded on this great, huge fear of sex and controlling it. You know, so first it was masturbation back in the, you know, 18, which wasn't just them. That was kind of a fixation back in Victorian times, you know, just anti-sex, everything and masturbation. And now they have kind of switched it over to anti-LGBTQ. And they're just obsessed with, you know, the church has this human sexuality task force that they won't let anyone ask questions of or anything. They just say it's to define biblical marriage. And they're just, ugh. So anyway, that's kind of the background of the church. It's an enormous church that no one realizes how, because its presence in the United States is fairly small and shrinking. Ha, 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 ha. But it has about 22 million members worldwide. They're very aggressive missionaries, and they go out and colonize and exploit anyone that they can. They use medicine a lot. They have a very renowned, as somebody I said, not renowned, infamous medical school called Loma Linda. And so they churn out doctors and nurses at a huge rate. And the Adventist Church is very proud of this. And so they use teaching English and medicine, building clinics and stuff all over the world to, of course, suck people into the cult. And, you know, and it works when you're in a really underserved community. You need medical care. So then, you know,
like your personal experience and your childhood, like growing up being part of the Seventh-day Adventist?
We were in a very conservative end of it. My father he had been a youth pastor, and he'd gone to the seminary and all of that. Then he went to their medical school. And so for most of my life, he was a doctor, but he preached also. And so we had to be, you know, the good preacher's kids, even though he wasn't technically leading a church. It was they control everything about, just like any cult, right? Everything about people's lives. You know, we couldn't we didn't even have a television in our house. Couldn't listen to music, any secular music. They're vegetarian. They don't believe in caffeine or alcohol. You can't have pepper or spices, because that's leftover from the Victorian obsession with sex. Like, anything spicy inflames the senses.
Aphrodisiac, yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And so that was the way we were raised, just like absolutely closeted. We lived in a community that was all Adventists. I mean, even the postal delivery guy was an Adventist. And you were just expected to kind of stay in this circle. They have their own colleges. They have their own, you know, everything. So I went to all the religious schools, the Adventist schools, and had no contact with anyone who wasn't Adventist. And then I just decided when I was 17 that I was shit full of it. And so I had a big fight with my parents and ended up going to Columbia University in New York City, and got to go to a real school, and have been very vehemently ex-Adventist ever since.
And about how long ago was that?
That was 35 years ago.
Great.
No, okay. 37, 38 years ago.
So you're out 35 years. but yet you're still an outspoken advocate or anti, not advocate, advocate for cult, ex-cult survivors, but you're still very much involved in spreading the word against this cult.
And It was an interesting trajectory. So when I got out, I tried to pretend that I would not talk about it. I didn't tell anybody that I knew in college of my background. I just tried to live life like 100% going the opposite direction. No connection to religion. No, nothing to see here. You know, tried to catch up madly, you know, tried to learn what Charlie's Angels was about and all the things that I had missed with being closeted in this weird cult. And so for about 20 years, I lived with I was still talking to my parents, but you know, I didn't even go to church with them if I went to visit them for Christmas. So I just had no contact, no thought about the Adventist church whatsoever. I was just like, gone, done. They had enough of my life. Fuck them. I'm not going to like ever talk to them or about them again. And then about 15 years ago, I found out very traumatically that somebody in my family that I dearly, dearly loved, who had worked within the Adventist church system, had been a serial child predator. And the church had moved him around and covered up for him and done it again and again. And that just like, it just broke me, you know, it just broke me wide open. And I just, I thought I need to deal with this horrible system.
That was my question to you. When did you seem to circle back to come back and talk about this?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep. And I happened to be having children at that time too. So you were kind of already thinking about life and, you know, just all the bigger questions. And so I started then to deconstruct, you know, which I wish I had done obviously when I left, but I started to figure out all these very destructive patterns that I'd been living out in my life that I could trace straight back to the church and the indoctrination and the, you know, submissive obedience that they demanded of us and all that stuff. And, so then I ended up joining the deconstruction community online and discovering all these other people going through it with their religions. And I realized there were no Adventists talking about being open and out there. I would sort of find Adventists around the edges, and most of them were incognito because they still hadn't quite left or they had a job still with the church. And I realized, you know, oh my gosh, I don't care. I'm going to put myself out there and I'm just going to start speaking. So I started speaking, and then people started telling me their stories. You know, my DMs were just filling up with people telling their stories about serial child predators that had, you know, harmed them. And so I kind of became a lightning rod. There are other out Adventists, but not many. And so now I kind of almost feel like it's a, you know, it's what
calling.
I need. Yeah, I feel a call. The church does not deal with all of the sexual abuse, you know, like the SBC and the Catholics and everybody else have kind of had their reckoning.
Yeah. And they transfer their priests all over the place too.
Yeah. Yep. Exactly. It seems to be the more I dig into it, that is just the classic. I mean, like the Adventist church has a, you know, all the churches get insurance to protect them from sex abuse cases, which is just sick that they all just pay for insurance because they know it's going to happen. And so Adventists have this thing called Adventist risk management. And I've read their documents that they give about to the churches about, you know, what happens if you have a predator in your community? And I mean, it's just so they're still not dealing with it. They're just trying to cover their asses. And it basically sort of just says, oh, forgiveness, you know, well, forgiveness doesn't work. And particularly with churches like the Adventist Church, which up until extremely recently did not believe in psychology. That was all devil stuff. And so nobody was going to get treatment for anything. So,
How can you ask a 5-year-old or 8-year-old or 10-year-old child to forgive when they were traumatized?
Right. Yeah. I mean, it's ridiculous. And the stories that I hear, oh my God, from people who that is exactly it. You know, they put this poor traumatized child in a room with the predator and, you know, we need to talk it out and work out forgiveness. And then often there are NDAs wow. involved so that no one will talk about it. I mean, it's a travesty. It's a travesty.
That's crazy because that would be difficult even for somebody who was coming to terms with that as an adult to face their abuser or their predator, let alone putting a child in that position who doesn't even really fully understand or can't process what has even happened to them yet. That's insane.
Exactly. Wow. Yeah. Yep.
Melissa, this is somewhat related to something that happened recently, but I think I'd like to get your take on it. When you came back around, so after you found out about the pedophilia and you wanted to start calling them out or investigating or did you get any blowback from them? Any of the cult leaders? Did you get any lawyer letters? Did you get any cease and desist letters?
You know, I have not. And I am, I have gotten some very subversive, like I did have an Instagram account that I originally started speaking out on, and it got mysteriously completely, it just disappeared one day.
Hacked.
Disappeared.
Yeah.
And I couldn't get Instagram to talk to me about it. I couldn't ever get it back. I couldn't, you know, somebody complained and it disappeared. And stuff like that, but nothing overt.
But no life-threatening, intimidation, we're going to sue you. And there's a reason, and Melody knows why, there's a reason I'm asking this, because there's another cult that recently went after somebody who spoke out against them and they're threatening legal action. And she was a guest on our show and we had to take the episode down. So I think for the next couple of weeks, I'm trying to get some sort of a sense of, do cults typically go after their ex-members or anybody that speaks out against them?
Yeah. You know, I have never said any actual names of people or super identifying, you know, details. I would imagine they would come after me real hard and fast if I did. I talk a lot about cases that have already been prosecuted or are in the news so that they can't say anything.
So you just basically regurgitated facts that were already known, publicly known.
Right.
Okay.
And when you talk about it in a broad sense, you're not specifically naming people. Unless they've already been named legally in lawsuits.
I do talk about cases that I know of personally and that people have told me, but I hold back the personal details then a lot of the time to protect the survivors and victims, but also just because, they're extremely litigious and they're extremely rich and they're very powerful. So I am not going to deliberately court their...
You're not going to poke the bear.
Yeah.
Okay. I understand that you have a memoir in a draft or your publisher is putting it together. You want to talk about your memoir?
Sure. It is under the working title right now of The Glory Hole, W-H-O-L-E. And it is all written and it is with my agent right now and she is working the proposal into, it's kind of an exciting time right now, actually. She is going to start hitting publishers in September next month with the proposal, et cetera. And we did have a bite from a publisher last year that ended up having some Adventist connections and he sat on it for 7 months and did nothing and rejected it. So there's another little, I wonder if the church was involved, you know?
Yeah.
But I can't prove it. I don't know. So the book is basically about the story that I just told you about, you know, my extremely cloistered and, you know, obsessively submissive childhood within this religion, then escaping and thinking, you know, escape equaled healing. I was done. And then realizing 20 plus years later that I was not done. I had never processed any of it or healed from any of it. Yeah, and that was set off by finding out about this family member who was an abuser. And so the church had hushed it all up at the time he was doing it. And then it came out this 20 years later and they were hushing it up again. And my family was hushing it up. And I was like, I'm not going to play that game. And so I tracked down one of the victims and I wrote to her and I just said, you may not want to hear shit at all from me, but I have questions and I can't get answers from anybody else. And she and I became really good friends. And she had other horror stories about the Adventist church. And so we kind of, she kicked me off. I really did not want to look at the church. I didn't want to know anything about the church. I really, it was so traumatic. But she was like, you've got to deal. You know, you've got to look at them as an organization. And it was, that was really what helped me kind of heal and get through it, get over that. So that is what I wrote about. And we'll see. I'm very excited to share it with everybody.
Yeah. And congratulations. It sounds the more so Melody and I started this podcast, I don't know, 6 months ago. She would know better than me because I have no track of time. And we're approaching 30 episodes, but it seems like every episode that we do, except maybe a handful, the cults that we're into, the people that we're interviewing, many of these cults are struggling. And there's a lot of publicity. So I think thankful to HBO, Netflix, Amazon, Hulu, A&E, and probably another five streaming services or networks are doing their due diligence. I don't know if it's the right word, but they're coming out with documentaries because I think America has not full. And this is why I started the podcast, because when I met Melody and before that, I was doing investigations on the Twin Flames universe on my other podcast. I got hit with this like, wow, I did not understand how many cults there are out there.
Yeah.
And it seems like over the 70s, 80s, or maybe earlier, and throughout the last decade or so, they were very strong, they were very powerful. But I'm starting to, and you can correct me, I'm starting, like you said, that in America, they're not so strong anymore. I'm starting to see, hopefully, that a lot of these cults are starting to panic. They're starting to realize that what's the term, the writing's on the wall. I don't think they're going to give up so easy, but I see a trend. I think what I'm getting at, there's a trend in America that Americans are starting to, because of these documentaries and people like yourself. I think Melody said you're on TikTok, you got 21,000 followers. That's a good number. So there's people out there that are angry or upset that this is going on. If you just mention Twin Flames Universe on YouTube, TikTok, you will get flooded with like anti-Twin Flames.
Yeah.
And Melody and I had to deal with them a couple of days ago. We could talk about that another time. But they're bleeding too, because they had a documentary come out against them and they were exposed and they're bleeding. They're losing membership. They're losing money. And they're not the typical cult. Like, they're not a religious cult, although somebody did say they are a religious cult. I don't think they're a religious cult. They're just I got to be careful here. I did a rant last night, and I was told, do not publish this rant. So, but they're bleeding, which means they're panicking. They're seeing their numbers go down. They're seeing that their new memberships are not coming up. And Twin Flames, unlike your cult and Jehovah's Witness, and you don't have to pay money to join. You're just born into it, or like... You were born into it, correct?
Yeah.
So I don't know if your parents, I know there's tides. So If you're a member, you have to give part of your salary. But Twin Flames is one of those things. You go to their website, you sign up, you give them your email, and there's a free trial. And then, but then they hook you and they start selling you all this stuff. Uh-huh. And I think people are starting, in the beginning, it seemed wonderful. Everybody was flocking there. They had a huge following. They raised millions of dollars. Yeah. And now they're bleeding because of all these, all the pushback, anti.
Well, so, because the truth is being exposed. And I think that
exactly.
is because of the documentaries. And I think a lot of the reason that a lot of this is coming to a head is because we are in the digital age. And it's very hard to keep those secrets anymore.
Very.
You know, 30 Correct. Years ago, it was easy it's to so... keep people. They were isolated and they thought they were alone, whether they were or not. Is really beside the point, but everybody thought they were alone. And now we've got a way to connect with other survivors that may live 1,000 miles away from us, but we're like, wow, we have very similar stories. And I think it is helping to expose these lies and reveal the truth of what's going on.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. Definitely the documentaries have helped, and just social media in general. That's just a 1-2 punch that I really think all the churches and cults are struggling to deal with it. They really are. I keep
what?
There will be a documentary on the Adventists.
I was just going to ask you that. Is there one, or is there one in the works?
There isn't one. I had a couple of people reach out to me over on social media like 2 years ago. Sort of during the pandemic, and they were producers of documentaries, and they asked if I was interested, and I said no. You know, I really want to focus on my book first, but I have since reached out to some of them again and been like, okay, I'm at a place with my book where I have more bandwidth now, so we'll see. There's nothing in the works that I know about yet, but oh my gosh, I think it would be the best thing ever.
These documentaries that are coming out, and Melody is really good at finding them, and because she's always telling me, gotta watch this one, you gotta watch, but I just don't have all the streaming services. But these networks are producing these documentaries, and I think because they're doing very well, their viewership, the Twin Flames was like the number one watch show for I don't know 6 months or something like that.
Don't
give up on that. Pursue that. Yeah.
Okay. I will. I definitely, because I did. I heard the Twin Flames one was very popular. Shiny Happy People was, I think, Amazon's or something, like top show again for weeks and weeks, you know. So they're making the networks money. So you would think they'd want to do more of them. So, you know, my only worry, just to get back to what you were saying about the, you know, it seems to be going down here in America. And my worry is that things like the Mormons and the Adventists, because they're so rich and big and missionary oriented, I think we're just exporting the poison. You know, I get the most violent, nasty, defensive, dug in, angry commenters that I get on my material are people from Africa and Asia. And they are just, you know, you can kind of tell in their fervor that they are fairly new converts. You know, they are just so passionate about it. And, you know, again, when the Adventists sweep into town and they bring all this awesome stuff that your community has needed, of course you're going to, you know.
Absolutely.
Blame those people. But it worries me because, you know, the Adventist church is growing abroad. It's shrinking here, but it's growing abroad.
But think about it. If they go to Africa or Asia or any other third world country and they try to expand there, the money that they're counting on, like, so in America, a tide is worth a lot more money here than it is there. So go to Africa, go to a village or a tribe or a community and open up one of these the Advent churches. But you're not going to get anywhere near the money you get in America. So they may be expanding. You have your finger up.
That's I'm pointing at you because you made a really good point. That's exactly. So the money is coming from the United States, really, that's funding all of that over there. And as the United States shrinks here,
it's going to cut down on their ability to do that over there.
That's my point. That's my point.
That's a great point. Ooh, I'm going to sleep well tonight thinking about that.
So you got somebody in America, and Melody and I talked about this, but I'm going to say it anyway. There is another organization we know called Scientology, and they are funded by celebrities and very well-known, very well-off individuals.
Yeah.
But so that's an example of how I don't think that's going anywhere anytime soon.
Yeah.
But something like your cult, if the money dries up in America, it's going to dry up overseas.
Yep. Right. Yep. You're so right. And I didn't actually think that, because it just makes me sick. I just hate the whole colonial missionary thing. And but you're right. It's all being funded by people here, and the pool here is shrinking. Right. So,
yeah,
we can hope. We can hope. Oh no,
word is getting out.
Yeah,
I have a gut feeling that it may not be in my lifetime, and I'm in my 60s. But I think in the next 20 to 30 years, the word cult will be I don't want to say thing of the past, but they will not be as dominant as they are today.
Yeah.
Especially when history has shown. So you got Johannesburg, you got Waco. I mean, we could list who were the ones that all committed suicide because they were going up into a spacecraft. You know, there's all these all these tragic endings to a lot of these cults.
Correction. Yeah, that was Heaven's Gate. Not Mooney's.
Okay. See, you can't even keep track of them anymore.
I know, right?
Let's look at the fact that why do people join these religions? Because I love saying this. Nobody wakes up in the morning and says, "Hey, I think I'll join a cult today." They wake up joining some sort of religious or any organization. We've interviewed people that have been in cults, but they're not religious. They're spiritual in nature. They're new agey.
Right.
But they think they're getting into something. People want a sense of belonging, and they want a sense of, this guy's very charming. The leader is charming and blah, 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 blah.
Uh-huh.
And right in the middle of that sentence, a thought just went out of my head. But I think what you're going to see is people are going to wise up. You know, I'm going to shift a little bit here. What is another very big growing problem in the world today when it comes to the digital age is the romance scams. So you're on a dating app, or you're on Facebook or wherever, and you get contacted by somebody and they want money, right? They do the love bombing.
Yeah.
That has peaked. That has become the number one fastest growing crime. I don't know if it's in the world or in America.
Yeah.
But I just read a magazine article just a couple of days ago that with all the education that, for example, the article was an AARP magazine.
Uh-huh.
And I just listened to an episode to another podcast that's one of my favorite, and they're educating people. So people are becoming educated how not to fall for these romance scammers. I think what's happening there is happening in the cult world. People are being told, if you're going to join a religious organization, and parentheses cult, but again, nobody joins cults, they join organizations. They should do their due diligence, do their research, find out, go online and Google the Seventh-day Adventists. Go online and Google them. If there's lawsuits, if there's pedophilia accusations, if there's child labor law being broken, if there's mysterious disappearances of people, anything.
Yes.
I wouldn't join that organization.
Yeah.
So people should just do their due diligence and do some research before you join an organization.
Yeah, Yeah. And like we were saying, there's so much available now, you know, I mean, they can't hide things anymore. So it's almost kind of on the people who join for not doing that research. And yeah, well, I mean, I'm going to keep speaking out. And I mean, I'm hoping that it's a dying thing.
See the, and I hate to keep bringing it up, but it's so new, but it's relevant. So the Twin Flames, they came along at a very good time, but they made many, many, many mistakes along the way. And now, so they've been in existence maybe 5 years.
Yeah.
And they kind of went like this, and then they went up, they peaked, and they did very well. And that's when they caught the attention of Netflix and Amazon. And now they're on their way down. And I see them within 2 or 3 years folding up. I really do. I think people are not, they sell their services as, we're going to find your twin flame for you, and just give us $1,000. You could take these courses and we'll teach you how to. And then, of course, if you know the story, if they don't find your twin flame, they assign one to you. And you go in, you pay $2,000, and a year later, you don't have a twin flame. So they'll come along and say, well, Melody's your twin flame, but Melody is the wrong gender. So Melody has to have top surgery. And this is what they're doing. Yeah.
Gosh.
Yeah. So, and this has come out in the media, and they're talking about it, and this is negative publicity, because
big time.
But unfortunately, many of these people in the cults went and had top surgery, and there were people who had, they were suicidal. Anyway, I don't want to get off your cult.
I bet.
But is the kind of stuff that we were talking about. The digital age is informing the population.
But it also is bringing up new potential cults that have the ability to use the internet, because basically, really, Twin Flames is an online cult. But I think, you know, just like you're being very present in social media against the group that you know the most about, which is your ex-cult, Seventh-day Adventist, I know there are a lot of people out there speaking out against Twin Flames, too. So I do think that there is, to some of what Andrew was saying, especially since Andrew and I talked to so many people, and we've got, it really is disheartening how many of these cults, with the exception of very few, that children are the ultimate victims.
Yep.
In these organizations. And it's really disheartening that is who is paying the price for a lot of this is children.
Yeah.
And we interviewed.
And women.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. You know,
a lot of these women are not allowed to associate with the men. They have to, they have to cook and do all the housework, and they have to dress a certain way. They have to wear, you know, dresses, like almost like the Muslims. They have to wear burqas.
Yep.
And
it's
2024. What I never understood about, and I'll say this for the Muslims, and I'm not saying anything against them, but this country was founded on people came from Britain here because they were being taxed and they couldn't practice the religion. So this country was founded on freedom of religion, freedom of speech, and taxation without representation at all. And once again, a thought just went out of my head. Why would somebody go from Saudi Arabia or pick any country that's Muslim, come here, but bring their negative practices? I was taking a walk during lunch today, which I do every day. I work in a semi nice neighborhood, and I went past a family, and the woman, it was a father, the mother, and the child, and the mother, you couldn't see. She was wearing sunglasses, and she was covered from here to here and straight down in black. And I'm like, why? You're in America now. You You have a choice. And I get it. They might have been there for 30 years because this couple looked like they might have been in their 30s. And that's how they were brought up. So yeah. They're going to carry their culture over. But I just don't
understand
why
you... Most likely the child won't because the child's growing up.
Was not in a burqa, but the child who was maybe 7 was wearing a headscarf and she was completely covered except for her face. So they're raising the child in the same fashion.
Right, yeah, but she's also being exposed to the American culture.
Right, and it's just a matter of time before she wants a cell phone. It's a matter of time before when she goes, although they won't send her to public school, they'll send her to a Muslim school. But even there, they're you know, I'm sorry if I'm going to go off topic here, but the East hates the West. But yet the East will use all the West technology, Instagram and Facebook and Reddit and all those. They're American companies and Google. And yet over there in the East, they're using our technology. And so I think it's a matter of time. The children, this couple that I ran into, that child, I don't think is going to grow up and wear a burqa. I think she's going to,
right?
What do we call it, Melody? Critical thinking. I think she's going to wake up one day and go, "No, I'm not going to dress like that,"
right?
Because she's going to meet other
Melissa
friends
here,
of hers.
She was fourth generation, and she had enough exposure to the outside world to get to an age where she wanted to walk away. She's just like, "I'm done."
Yeah.
And we see it in the Amish community. A lot of the Amish community are losing members.
Yeah. Again, it's all that social media exposure and everything. I mean, there are lots of legitimate complaints about social media, but I think that's a huge gift that it's given
us. 100%.
Survivors of various things can find other stories to match up with online, and you can do your due diligence and research the bullshit that's being told to you,
Absolutely.
Oh, all right, Melissa. What? So you're here, and you're thankfully your post. You exited 35 years ago, but you came back. I'm guessing 5 or so years ago, to speak out against and write a book.
Yeah.
What advice do you have to anybody that's listening who's either thinking of joining an organization, whether it's cult or not, or if somebody is in one of these organizations and got their hand on a cell phone and happens to listen to a podcast, because they do. We heard some stories where they would run off and they would listen to radio stations, or they would download Instagram. And what message do you have to anybody out there that might be
questioning
the borderline of either leaving or questioning? Thank you.
Yeah. That's a really good question, because it's so often the first problem that people who are in that position, they don't know how to define boundaries and like you were just saying, critical thinking. So I think the very first thing it's sort of to me like leaving an abusive relationship. Don't give any clues. Don't broadcast your intention that you're thinking, questioning, all that stuff. Do it all internally and start trying to critically look at things. Again, look at outside sources like we were talking about. Research it online. Are there sex abuse cases? And like you were saying, it doesn't have to be a religion. It could be a company that you're going to join. But are there lawsuits? Are there? And this is very hard with religions, but to really look at the pressure that is behind what people are saying. And it's often very subtle, but what do they need from you? Like, what are you giving them that makes you desirable to their group? You know, it could be a really great talent for a company that you really want to work with, Microsoft or whatever, and it would be a great association. But, often with churches, it's not what are they looking to suck out of you? And And then I think for people who have one foot out the door and are already leaving, I would just offer a lot of encouragement. And it's a slow process and it's not linear. You recover this part and you go backwards on that part. And then you all of a sudden, this makes sense. Oh my gosh. And you kind of sit with that for a while. And then all of a sudden, it's not, that part's not important anymore. It's a long, I think it's a lifelong process getting out of that kind of group, any kind of group think, where you've been told what to do, what to think.
And having come from gentle, a cult for myself, I 100% agree with that. It really is. And it's, and you continue learning and figuring it out as you go. The older you get, the more you learn. Because I've been out of my cult for 30 years.
And what's to stop you? So I got two ex-cult members in front of me. I could ask you this and maybe you could help me. So Melody left the house of Yahweh. But let's say, Melody, you wanted to continue to hold on to the faith of what they were teaching, but you didn't want anything to do with the members anymore. What's to prevent you from leaving but still practicing your faith? You don't need a building with a steeple. You don't need a kingdom hall like Jehovah's Witnesses to worship in. You can worship in your own home, or you can go out to a mountaintop and talk to God on the mountain. You could do so many things and keep your faith, but just not be part of the larger problem, which is the pedophiles, the elders who are moving priests and apostles and the leaders around.
And sometimes, and Andrew, you know this. You know, I held on to a lot of my beliefs for years. I didn't.
You
I took
did
me seven, 17 years to put a Christmas tree in my house. Perfect example. You know, I deconstruct. Yeah. You have to deconstruct at your own pace. You can't, you can't force those things on somebody. They have to figure that process out. It's, and Melissa, you can probably attest to some of that too. I mean, I don't know how much of your beliefs you've held on to, but. But it takes time.
Not much, but,
what do you practice today?
I'm an atheist.
Wow. How many times have we heard that? So people who have left cults just disconnected their belief. They're either agnostic or atheist. And, I find that amazing.
Once I started looking at everything, I mean, in college, I went through a little bit of a Buddhist phase, and
I think we all do.
Yeah, right. Exactly. It's like picking up.
I did. Yeah.
Yeah. But I think, you know, to your point, there, that would be another good question to ask if you're questioning and trying to leave things: is who's telling you in that group that you can't leave and just go on a mountaintop and do this by yourself? If they're telling you you need them, you need to stay with them. They're a cult, and it's not, you need to run. You need to run.
Because ultimately, your relationship, and I'm going to say God.
Right.
In whatever
creator,
way you
higher
believe in
power,
God. I call my God a higher power.
Right.
Your relationship with him is your personal relationship. Why do I have to go to a hall with 50 other people and I'm thinking of, and I don't necessarily think these are cults, but you go down south to where some of the gospel preachers are, and they're all standing up, waving their hands and singing the gospel. I have no problem with that. But what's to stop you from going to your own home and doing that?
Right.
Your relationship with God is a personal choice. And I just don't know why people need to feel that they have to go to a building on a Saturday or a Sunday.
Yeah.
And be with 100 other people. And again, I'm going to talk about it. In one of the Jehovah's Witnesses cases, during a ceremony, there was a guy that dragged a 6-year-old girl into the bathroom so he could molest her. And nobody said beep, And so if I saw something like that, I'd be gone. I'd be like, that's it. But if I believed in what Jehovah's Witness was preaching, I would just go home and preach it. Believe in it. So
yeah, exactly.
Melissa, unfortunately, due to time, we have to start to wrap it up. So tell us, when do you think your book's coming out?
You know, I'm right now doing the traditional publishing process, which is an extremely long and drawn out process. So I would say probably 18 months, maybe to 2 years, really, to give it the full process.
Okay.
Of editorial, et cetera. But people can follow me on my Instagram, my TikTok. It's all The Glory Hole, W-H-O-L-E. And I have a little video on there that explains why I picked that play on words. If people,
I was just going to ask you, can you explain that in a minute or less?
In a minute or less, I can try really fast. So it is, for people who don't know, a glory hole, H-O-L-E, is for anonymous sex, and it's right. used by men in, you know, and so, or generally used by men. And so to me, that was when I started deconstructing, like, my metaphor for Christianity, like, you extend this very, very private, very unprotected part of yourself out into this unknown. You just extend it out there like, oh, here's my soul. And, you know, whoever's over there in the church or whatever is supposed to give me back. You know, maybe I'll see God. Maybe I'll have the most, you know, transcendent experience of my life. Or it could turn out really, really badly.
Yeah. Hey.
And you could be wounded and disfigured and be, you know, never the same. So yeah. That was my little play on words.
Okay. Melissa, well, we can't thank you enough for coming on. Go ahead, Melody.
Oh, I wanted to thank her too. And I just wanted to also tell people, if you want more information on our Seventh-day Adventist, Melissa's TikTok is full of, she has so much information on there. If you're looking for more information, go to her page, because I am telling you, she has got video after video after video. She is really putting a lot of information out there. And I just want to thank you so much for coming on the show, for sharing your story with us, giving us the background that you've given us, and telling us about your book, speaking your truth, because I obviously that is part of your healing. And I can totally relate to that, because doing this podcast and having my Facebook support groups is part of my healing. So I can totally relate to that. And it really does. When you feel like you're helping others, you feel like you didn't go through what you went through for nothing. And it is part of that deconstruction process. Not for everyone, but I can relate to that being part of your healing process. And
yeah, absolutely. I'm on TikTok now. One more time. What's your?
It's The Glory Hole.
Oh, how did I forget that?
W-H-O-L-E.
W-H-O-L-E.
And yes, thank you so much for having me. And I would love to come back and talk about my book once.
Absolutely.
Hopefully we're still going in 18 months or 2 years, and we'll have you back on the show to promote it. Yes, 100%. Thank you, Melissa.
Thank you.
Once again, we want to thank Melissa so much for coming on the show, for sharing her story, her experience, her knowledge, going into the history. And I wanted to mention, too, about her telling her part of the story, that finding out that there was somebody that she knew from her cult that ended up being a sexual predator, and how that was a trigger, and it set off her deconstruction and her healing process, and how I could absolutely 100% relate to that, because that was a lot of what caused me to create the Cult Escape and Recovery Group on top of the other, was the loss of an ex-member to an overdose. That was very upsetting to me, and I just felt like I wasn't doing enough, and it motivated me. So I could really relate to her doing that, and I thought, I'm pretty sure that you can too, Andrew, because you were triggered by twin flames, and that's what inspired you to dive into the cult realm, which, even though you're not an ex-member, but you still were triggered.
Be careful when you say twin flame, because you're going to set me off on a rant. I, Melody, the people are not going to hear this episode for 8 weeks, all right? So people know we're 2 months backed up. But at the time of this recording is when the episode... we had to remove an episode from our podcast. So you may not even remember that in 2 months, but Melody's correct. It really triggered me, and I got really angry, and I wanted to go after, I am holding myself back at going after Jeff from Twin Flames. I want to go on this crusade and go out and on social media and really call them out. And I was speaking to a gentleman who runs a podcast website, and he, while he agrees with me, he said to me, "Be careful, just tread lightly." But I'm not afraid of this guy. I'm not. So anyway, we're getting off track. Well, what I liked about Melissa was Melissa. And if you said this, forgive me. She had gotten out of the cult and went on with her life.
Yes.
Did you say that?
Yeah, no, okay. I didn't mention how many years had gone by. I mentioned that she had a trigger, but yes, it was like, I think 35 years or something had gone by.
35 years she's out of the cult. And then that's wonderful because she came back to be an advocate and to help people. And so, Melissa,
for sure.
Great work. Really, yeah, great work.
Yes, and it actually reminded me, too, and I keep going back to his episode, but if you remember, Richard, I think it was Kier.
Kier.
He was from the Way of God or something was the name of the cult, but I always go back to how he ended his episode, and I just thought it was so profound, and I'm going to keep saying it because it was so eye-opening. And that's basically what she was saying, is that, you know, if you're wondering whether a group is legitimate or how they're going to treat you, look at how they treat the children. Watch how they treat the children. And again, this is a lot of what Melissa covers on her TikTok page, is about the abuses of children going on inside this organization in all the different branches. And she covers how they have their own lawyers to, like, almost preemptively expecting these lawsuits, which you're like, what? And they're already covering their butts before it happens. And it's just disheartening. It's disheartening how much of that we're hearing, Andrew. It's just mind-blowing.
You know, and Melody, we interviewed a guest a couple of nights ago, and I'm not going to mention her name because she won't be on for 2 months. But she said something in the interview that really struck me, you and I hadn't had a chance to discuss it. She said that while she left this cult, she considered it a cult, and you had said something like you never consider it a cult until after you leave. But she said to a cult, to some people, it's a cult, but to other people, it's not. Something to that effect.
Yeah.
And I completely forget why I brought that up. Oh, so what we were talking about is, I think she said it, many people have said it, before you join a religious organization or any kind of organization, do your research and whether or not they have any kind of history with child abuse.
Yes.
And that will indicate, and I know Melody and I keep promising that we're going to do this. One day we're going to sit down and do a criteria of what makes a cult. But it is true that do the research on the organization. So if you recently married and you moved to a new town and you want to start a life and you want to join the community and there's some church down the block, you go, oh, that's a nice church, let's go join it. Research before you start. Yeah. Find out if there's any history, because you might be joining a cult and yada, yada, yada. So,
yes. Talk to somebody who's been in there and left and see what they have to say.
Listen, we don't like reporting on cults. It's not something, it's not a pleasant thing, but it's a reality. They're here.
Yes.
And they're not I'm going to mention this because it came to my attention the other day. There is a website called cultpodcast.com. And what he does is he wrote some algorithm or AI thing where it goes out on the internet and it looks for every podcast with the name cult in it. And he publishes them. So at the top of the page, it says there are over 28,000. And then he corrected me. He says that they're more like toward 29,000, a podcast about cults, which just blows my mind that I had no idea. So if there's that many podcasts about cults, can you imagine how many cults there are?
Right.
And I know we're going, I know I said we're going to keep this short. I received news. I received news today from somebody that runs a website about there's a Filipino man who is hiding in his compound because the Philippine government wants to arrest him for child abuse. And did I send you the article?
No, you didn't. Is he a cult leader? I'm just assuming.
Yeah, he's a cult leader in the Philippines. So, we're in America, and we're talking about American cults, and sometimes these American cults are global, but it's international. It's just amazing. Yes. So, you know what a bucket list is. My bucket list is to see twin flames dissolve, like implode. But ultimately, I'd also like to see many, many other cults go away as well. Before, yes. You know, when they hook, before they put the pillow over my head, I would like to, put me out of my misery. Just tell me that, you know, the cult, the population of cults has gone down 50% or whatever. Okay, I'm done.
Yes. Okay. I think it's heading in that direction, Andrew. I really do. And I'm just going to say, too, that obviously we have, as a society, we have a lot of interest in cults based on all these podcasts that are out there, all these documentaries they're doing. But I think that's a good thing. I think that's helping to bring more awareness. And I just want to thank people for their interest in not only listening to our podcast, but watching these documentaries. They are helping to shine a light on these things just by being active, just by being interested in what's going on. It is boosting the popularity of the topic,
yep.
And therefore people are gaining knowledge. The awareness is getting more out there more and more, which as an ex-cult member, I love that.
And that's going to bring me back to Twin Flames. Twin Flames, Netflix and Amazon were one of the first to do like although there were documentaries before them, but they were one of the first to really focus on Twin Flames. And look what it Twin Flames started to bleed. And so I'm going to stop there because I'll go off for another 5 minutes.
Well, once again, we're going to thank Melissa for coming on the show. And we want to thank all of you, as always, for tuning into Cultimatum. We always appreciate your support. If you could just take a moment to rate and review our podcast on platforms such as Apple and Spotify. And also don't forget to follow, share, and keep listening to all of our latest episodes.
You can also show your support by joining our Facebook group under the name Cultimatum Podcast. And I'm going to add once again that we only have 3 reviews. And we see the numbers. We know how many people are listening to our podcast. And it's a good number. We're very happy with the number of people listening. But we need you to stop. If you're on Apple or Spotify, stop, take 2 minutes and go down and rate our show. It helps our show go up in the rankings of Apple and Spotify.
And you don't have to be super wordy. Just say great show if you don't want to be super wordy. You can just do 2 words. We're good with that.
the key thing is 5 stars. Just give us 5 stars and if you think we're doing a great job. And I think we are.
And you can also find us. I agree, Andrew. And you can also find us on additional social media platforms, including Instagram, Pinterest, TikTok, and YouTube.
If you have a cult or human trafficking experience you'd like to share with us, please feel free to connect. If you have a cult or human trafficking experience you'd like to share with us, please feel free to contact us at cultimatumpodcast@gmail.com.
And for ex-cult members looking for any additional support, you can consider joining the Cult Escape and Recovery Group on Facebook.
And if you're interested in hearing more from me, you can find me on my other podcast, Anonymous Andrew, Life and the Choices We Make. And by the time you hear this, I'll be well into season 3.
And as always, stay safe, stay informed, and remember, you're not alone.